Since I have taken up residence in the land of paradox, it seems I cannot encounter life and faith in any other way. So as I reflect on the theme, Glimpses of the Spirit, I'll invite you to consider three paradoxes that I experience. If paradox, the possibility of holding contradictory truths at the same time, isn't for you, or perhaps you're not enamored with adverb-adjective combinations, you can check out right now, and I will not be offended. I think I have a good illustration near the end, so you might want to tune in for that. One other acknowledgement. I have slowly developed over the years a rather lively sense of the Trinity. While I cannot articulate this in clear theological terms, all three persons in a flow of relationship are equally vital to me. I speak of the Holy One, a Jewish term, the Trinity of Love, a Celtic term, Jesus as the fully human one, friend, guide, the Good Shepherd. I speak of the feminine spirit as wisdom, Sophia, the word of creation, the divine song. When I pray in words, I address my prayers to the gracious God, to the cosmic Christ, to the eternal spirit, and a whole lot more. So to glimpse the spirit is also to glimpse Yahweh, the one true God, and as well to recognize the abiding spirit of Jesus, promised in John 14. It's all one awe-inspiring mystery, far too big for words. And the capacity to parse out precisely which is which, that's not for me. So let's begin. Extremely loud and incredibly close. Thank you, Jonathan Safran Foer. Psalm 29, which we heard earlier, and Psalm 77, among others, explode with sound. The voice of God roars. In Psalm 29, the seas and the forests are stirred up. Recently, we heard the loud noises of Pentecost in Acts 2. There was a rushing wind and lots of noisy speakers in many languages. The children in worship were caught up in the story with those flames settling on everyone's heads. Incredibly close, this mighty spirit. Aaron Bergen reminded the children a few weeks ago during children's time that sometimes loud and noisy is exactly right. From time to time, I think of Annie Dillard's observations about our worship, that the High and Holy One, that the worship of the High and Holy One has gotten far too quiet and passive. She writes, "On the whole, I do not find Christians outside the catacombs sufficiently sensible of conditions. Does anyone have the foggiest idea of what sort of power we so blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children on the floor playing with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill a Sunday morning. It's madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense. Or the waking God may draw us out to where we can never return." We are right to feel awe and wonder at such realities, whether we glimpse them in worship or elsewhere. For many among us, the natural world may be the most accessible way to experience the sense of greatness and closeness of God. In Psalm 19, the heavens shout God's glory. It is extremely loud at times. Now, compared to the Grand Canyon and the whitewaters of the Colorado River, the mysterious Mount Denali in Alaska, the depths of the boundary waters so many of you know. Fiddler's Pond is a fairly domesticated place. Yet my daily walks around the pond can also open my eyes and ears to behold the wonder of a bald eagle, shy turtles basking in the sun, goldfinches, and iridescent tree swallows darting high and low, even the delight of our dog Marty sinking down into the cooling water. Surely all of these are glimpses of the spirit. However, like the psalmist in 42:2, we often want more. Where can I go and see God face to face? In Exodus 33 that Gail read for us, a weary and worn Moses expresses a similar desire. Especially when we are at our end, when we are unsettled, uncertain, or outraged. We want proof. The clear voice we can't help but hear. The face of love before our very eyes that we cannot miss. Seldom do we get face to face with the great I Am. Instead, we are offered an incredibly close view of hindquarters passing by, or the face of God in the face of a stranger or a friend, the touch of God in the soft skin of a baby, as Christy reminded us so poignantly a few weeks ago. I am certain there are more glimpses than we often know. See, here, we need to train and discipline ourselves to become more aware. And how might we train ourselves? Stunningly silent and puzzlingly absent. In 1 Kings 19, Elijah is in utter despair, as Ruth told the children. Israel, under the leadership of Ahab and Jezebel, has begun to worship the agricultural deity Baal. In a mission of prophetic truth-telling, Elijah proclaims a drought, enraging Ahab and Jezebel. Worse yet, years into the drought, at a public event full of fiery drama, the solitary prophet of Israel triumphs over the scores of Baal's prophets. We all know this story from Sunday school. Despite this miraculous victory and the promise of rain, Elijah flees to the safety of the desert and begs Yahweh to end his life before Jezebel does it. But his work is not done. And the Spirit finds a way to awaken and nourish him. Not in the high drama of whirlwind, or earthquake, or fire. Elijah in the desert gets silence. Utter silence. And then a still small voice offers not first reassurance. Instead, the voice asks a question. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? What are you doing here? My experience with the practice of centering prayer when I first dipped my toes in many years ago was not good. The silence didn't feel at all like presence. Racing mind, twitching muscles, a fear that 20 minutes might go on forever and I would indefinitely be held hostage. A few of us may be natural contemplatives. I've witnessed them occasionally in the circle of children in worship. But for most of us, silence can feel like absence, like nothing is happening. However, grief and suffering have the potential to take us to another understanding. Richard Rohr has declared this truth more times than I can count. I'm guessing that most of us have known moments where we did not want words, we did not want trite platitudes or well-meaning reassurances. If we are blessed, we have found companions who sit with us in the silence of sorrow. And we find that silence deeply consoling. These companions in silence give us a glimpse of the Spirit. In 1950, the activist Audre Lorde wrote a poem titled Memorial One, which includes these lines. If you come as softly as the wind within the trees, you may hear what I hear, see what sorrow sees. If you come as lightly as the threading dew, I will take you gladly, nor ask more of you. You may sit beside me, silent as a breath. For me, sorrow has opened a window into a silence that is often alive with presence. I'm not much of an early riser. The late night hours are where I tend to linger. Nevertheless, for a few years now, I've made my way to a small circle of silence twice a week at Pathways. Something has changed significantly since my first encounters with centering prayer so many years ago. Nearly every Tuesday morning, I hear these words on Linda Thomas's lips. Welcome to contemplative sit. We sit in the presence of God just as we are and open to God's loving gaze. The invitation is simply to be here and now, to sit quietly, breathe, relax, and deepen your ability to settle into your own presence and the presence of divine love already at home within. We are so used to presence, meaning speech, lights, camera, action. But what if absence and presence are intertwined, opposite sides of the same reality, woven together with silence? The presence of that absence is everywhere, wrote Edna St. Vincent Millay. Deeply personal and surprisingly communal. I'm convinced, you know this, that the Spirit knows each of us intimately. Psalm 139 is the fullest expression of this intimate knowing, but the theme runs through other biblical material as well. John 14 speaks of the intimacy of the Comforter, the Paraclete, the one who comes alongside. My experiences, my knowing and being known, will not be like yours. As I practice a kind of Lectio Divina with the Psalms most nights, I find the Psalms have become bread in the wilderness, as Thomas Merton says. Words, phrases, images give me glimpses of the Spirit's work over millennia with human beings whose joys, ecstasies, sorrows, and outrage are much like mine. It's not that these glimpses sustain me indefinitely. Oh no, it's only daily bread, manna, just enough for that day, or sometimes for that hour. Sometimes a psalm that I've loved seems to go stale, or worse yet, rancid for a time. So it goes. Similarly, For me, I've learned many of the hymns in our four songbooks here at Assembly. Sometimes the lines of a hymn can fairly leap off the page. They are suddenly infused with wisdom and beauty, profound and deep, when I sing with all of you. They linger in my heart and mind and voice, breathing life. Other times, they lay there, flat on the page, bound up with similarly flat melodies and boring alto lines. But I continue singing, because for me, singing is one way to glimpse the Spirit. I've also heard the Spirit speak very clearly as I listen to and witness the timpanist at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I could do a little homily on that. For example, the way he keeps tuning all through a piece. My snowdrops speak to me in voices clear and pure. February is the very best. The Spirit has come to me via wild geese on more than one occasion. And don't get me started on turtles. Have I gone off the deep end? Indeed, I have. And thanks be to God. The depths of despair, the depths of my own soul, these are also the depths of steadfast love and mercy. Take it down, down, down. Take it down, sings John Hiatt, and I'm right there with him. I know enough now to understand that the way the Spirit allows me to glimpse her, hear her, feel her presence will not be the same for you. You are designed and made for your own unique relationship with the High King of Heaven. Yes, a personal relationship with Jesus, a baptism of the Holy Spirit. But none of us finds it all at once, and none of us find it all alone. The Spirit, after all, is surprisingly communal. Those spiritual disciplines I practice, I didn't invent them. I've been guided by the biblical text, a book held by a vast tradition of both Jews and Christians over millennia. I'm learning from the early church Abbas and Ammas, from the medieval mystics, from contemporary voices in poetry, fiction, spiritual guidance, and faith formation. I'm learning from some of you. I'm surrounded by the communion of the saints, and some days I even know it. The Spirit is given to communities of faith and to individuals, not for their own personal possession, but to further the reign of God in the world. Each individual experience is not mine, but part of a larger whole. I believe the Spirit fills and longs to connect the entire creation. And speaking of connection, while I was mulling over this upcoming sermon on glimpses of the Spirit, I heard an amazing story on NPR's Weekend Edition. It's about ants. Anybody else hear it? Ants, Edgar, yes, Mary. Ants who live on the floodplains of Central and Southern Europe. This particular species is being studied at the University of California, Riverside. And the species is Formica salesi. These subterranean ants survive floods by floating out of trouble on rafts of their own extraordinary construction. They join together by attaching leg to leg, mouth to leg, creating multi-layered rafts of their own bodies. It seems the worker ants take the lead in the assembly of the raft. The queen will sit very still. She will be groomed by the workers in the midst of this emergency, so she's been taken care of. And ultimately, she's sort of lifted up and placed right in the center of the raft under a dome of workers, and with a platform of workers below her. You may wonder about the ants on the bottom of the raft. Is this about altruism and self-sacrifice? No, though that is what researchers first thought. Instead, It turns out that the ants on the bottom can survive for hours under water. And in fact, the youngest and most vulnerable members of the community, the pupae and larvae, are placed in these underwater layers to protect them from harm. It appears the depths have some things in their favor. Individual ants are unable to survive floods in any way, but working together, literally connecting to one another, they show enormous creativity and what researchers call swarm intelligence. And what's more, it appears they remember from one time to another how to get through the flood. I've been pondering those rising waters and that queen sitting there calmly, a little like Jesus in the boat in the midst of the storm. I've pondered those ants on the bottom layer. Heading down and trusting the good yet to follow. I've pondered how they develop and seem to remember patterns for getting through the high water. Without making this an allegory, I believe it is a marvelous glimpse of the spirit and the communal nature of her creative work. Do I understand, comprehend all that I've said this morning? Can I prove it? Do I know what it all means? Stephanie Paulsell, writing in a recent Christian Century, quotes from an Edgar Allan Poe short story. I seemed to be on the verge of comprehension, without power to comprehend. As men sometimes find themselves on the brink of remembrance, without being able, in the end, to remember. Paulsell says, this is where we of people of faith often find ourselves. The disciples heard the word preached in their own language on Pentecost, yet they still had to ask, what does this mean? And then they kept on trying to find out. They broke bread together. They studied the word together. They enjoyed one another's company. They shared both their needs and their abundance. They stretched beyond their own boundaries. They kept their eyes open for further glimpses of the Spirit. On the verge of comprehension, we're not called to perfect understanding, but to the imperfect life of community, where with practice and with grace, we catch glimpses of the Spirit, who is extremely loud and incredibly close, stunningly silent and puzzlingly absent, deeply personal and surprisingly communal. May it be so.